Let's call this meeting to order.
All right, we're still waiting for Greg, but I'm fine with that. Let's do it.
All right, introductions. I should probably turn this thing on. We need to do introductions. Hi, I'm Bob.
Okay, I'm Holden.
Ari.
I'm Ellie.
Hi, I'm Lindy.
Can I do this?
And Tom here.
Great. All right. Attachment A, budget approval. Holden or Ellie, whoever is most appropriate, can you guys walk us through this?
Yep. Let me make sure I have this in front. One thing to note, I'm not presenting a past budget from the last approval period because we're currently in the process of outsourcing our bookkeeping services. So we're not, you know, we're not going to do that. We're going to do that at the next meeting when it's ready. And here's Greg. Hey, Greg, can you just say I'm Greg?
Yeah, I'm Greg.
Okay. All right, so the meeting's already been called to order. We're on attachment A, which is the budget review. I'm just noting that I'm not presenting the past expenses from the past period. I'll be doing that at another meeting. And the reason for that is that we're in the process of outsourcing our bookkeeping services, so we don't have that budget yet, and we will.
Do you have a picture of whether...
Yeah, it was. I mean, I checked over it. It was definitely in line. There were certain items that were below what was projected and approved. There was nothing, you know, substantially above. So, and it's not going to be a problem. But we're not voting on that at this meeting. Okay. Why I don't have the budget attachment? So can you? Oh, there it is. Okay. So as far as
like wind blowing by their phone.
Who's got the wind?
I think it's me. I'm going to be out of the wind in 1 second.
You can press star 6 to mute yourself if you want.
Yep. It's going to go away in a minute.
Okay. So as far as the budget, I mean, here's the budget. It lists the major changes. Oh, we should probably go around and just, and people say who's read what, just so I know, if there's like big things that people haven't read. I stated in the email that the only thing you needed to read was kind of the top section of each attachment, and the rest was supporting details, but let's, you know, obviously I've read and gone over everything. Other people?
All right.
I read it all. Greg?
No, I didn't even, I scanned a tiny bit, not even achieved what you asked us to do.
Okay. Greg failed. Bob?
I failed.
Bob failed. Others?
Katana's read everything.
And so did Lindy.
Yeah, so
Tom. Okay, and Ellie read everything. Okay. So, kind of for the benefit of Greg and Bob, I mean, it says it right here, but one of the big, you know, we're outsourcing our bookkeeping services. That's projected to cost around $3,000 for kind of the startup plus the audit prep, which is a separate service that we also got from the same firm last year, and it cost us something like $1,500 or $2,000 then. And it's going to cost something like $700 a month is the estimate going forward. And it saves me a lot of time. And to me, it's, you know, one of the easiest ways to trade money for time, which is a lot of what we're trying to do with the hiring stuff anyway. So that's that. You know, the number that's gone up to an enormous degree is the grants allocation. That's very simple. We got some donations, including the grant from, we're going to have to excise this name, but which was not in the previous budget, and that included $250,000 to be re-granted. We've also got a bunch of other donations to be re-granted, so now that's, you know, a fairly big number. And other than that, I mean, we've kept people posted on the hiring situation through the biweekly reports and haven't spent as much on that as anticipated. So that's basically the projection. And then if you were to look down on the document, you can see, kind of using this basic framework, how long our current reserves would last under various assumptions about hiring, including, you know, if you hire a certain number of people, the assumption that we would get an office. And all of the projections are, you know, somewhere between April and December of 2010 is when we would run out of cash if we didn't get any more revenue. So my basic picture is this is a reasonably sustainable level of expenses that we're at, and that's it, and asking for board approval. And this budget is through the end of June, and then we'll need to approve anything past that. Any questions before we vote or whatever?
No.
Okay.
Do you guys have any estimate or way of estimating what unrestricted grants you're going to get? I'm just wondering, is there any possibility of literally getting no reserves? Or literally the reserves running out in these days because they ran out in these days to be a quick ending.
Well, yeah, I mean, we continue to try to raise money, right? So the things we try to do for that, one, there's big grants. So we got two big grants last year. We're going to reapply for both this year. There's applying for new grants, which is something that's on the to-do list. It's something I haven't spent time on yet. But that, that's something that's on there. Just haven't gotten to it yet, but it's early in the year, and we will. And then there's raising individual donations. So, I don't have a prediction for the random stuff that goes through the site, but in December is when a lot of the people who originally supported us renewed their donations. So, no, I don't expect revenue to be zero going forward. I expect it to be enough.
But basically, our big focus through, the middle of the summer is research and finishing our report. And, in a little bit of time up through July, we're going to have to start thinking about other grants. And then after then is when we're going to, I think, really going to have to start focusing again on raising money or at least thinking about where the money's going to come from. At this point, we have a pretty sizable cushion.
And so, Holden, in terms of that, what are the of the money you collected from other people, so mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand this budget. The grants are, that's money, all your budgeting for grants is the money that was specifically donated for grants,
yes.
And then you have the other money that was unspecifically donated, mm-hmm. that you're saying none of that will be going to grants, which would be a change from the past, is that right? Like, how should I think about that?
Yeah, that's basically right. I mean, again, this is a projection. This is kind of trying to show, to me this shows that we're in pretty decent shape because we're not expecting revenue to be zero. So that's the basic idea of this view. And so it's not saying that we're necessarily going to use all the unrestricted revenues in that way, because if we keep raising money and we find ourselves with like more reserves than we need, then we are going to give out more than we were required to in grants. But this is showing what happens if we don't get any more revenue and we just last as long as we can and we use all our unrestricted for operating.
Right, so I think it's probably better to figure out somewhere put the operating excess or whatever that in terms of trying to think this through, because that's really what basically you're going to have raised more than you're going to have costs in
right.
Reading this right.
As of the end of this calendar year, yeah.
Right, and so that's right. Fine. You can save some because you don't know if that's always going to be true or whatever, but basically
right.
That number, the grant number, is going to be a function of that number, right?
Well,
like we're not planning on keeping keeping something like some relatively short period of money, right? Or are we going to pile up money here?
Well, that's something we haven't discussed formally. I mean, I can tell you what I've been thinking, but we haven't made any sort of agreement like, anything left over at the end of the calendar year is granted. Or, I don't think you proposed literally that, and I don't think it would be a good idea. But, what I would sort of informally say is that we want to have enough cash on hand. I think we want to have 12 months of cash on hand under reasonably realistic assumptions before we start trying to unload it in the form of grants, especially because with the new research model, grants are not as essential to the research model. And so really the only reason to unload it is if we really think we're, like, otherwise we'd be piling up excessively. At the same time, I don't want to pile up money excessively, so there's some number over which I would say, okay, now we're holding too much money, let's get rid of some of it. I don't know what that number is. I think it wouldn't be less than 12 months of reserves, and it might be more like 18.
Well, I don't care that much, but I think you should re-earn the right to exist and not pile it up. Like, that would be my view on that. And I think a fair amount of people who are donating did expect some of that money to go to donations and not to piling up so you could survive if you no longer had a purpose. Like, if people aren't willing to fund you.
I agree with all that in concept. So, but, I said, there's some number that would translate to.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, I'd probably put it at 18. Would you put it at 12 or would you put it somewhere else? Or do you not want to get into that now?
I don't care. I care more that it's dealt with.
Okay.
I think we're getting slightly off topic.
Mm-hmm.
We are. All right, well, you guys want to vote to approve the budget, and Greg and I can hash out exactly how that is operationalized later. I mean, I think everyone agrees on the concept. We don't want to be piling up money, and we do want to keep earning the right to exist. So, Greg and I can, or I can just come up with a proposal for operationalizing that, and let's go to the budget now. Is everyone okay with that?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. I vote in favor. I have a vote.
Vote in favor. I'm in favor.
I'm in favor.
I'm in favor.
Okay.
The margin is yes.
Get back to the agenda.
New bank accounts.
New bank accounts. So since Greg and Bob didn't get to look at these, I will quickly summarize the issue. We're holding a lot of reserves, as we just saw. The main reason that we want to open, well, I want authorization to open three new bank accounts, just because let's say that one of them has some weird process and it doesn't work out. You know, I just want authorization from the board to open three new bank accounts. And we're going to actually put money into two. And the reason is that, the main reason is because of the FDIC insurance limit. We're just being super conservative with our reserves. And this way we can split up our reserves into three segments, all of which are under the FDIC insurance limit. The secondary reason is that, you know, I did a search for the highest rates you can get in the money market account. These have slightly higher rates, and it comes out to about, I think it was like a little under $2,000 a year worth of extra interest, based on, you know, the reasonable assumptions about when the money will be dispersed. So that's the rationale. And then I attached to the email standard bank resolutions. There were three identical resolutions, all based on the same template from Chorus Bank. And, I mean, you can look at it here, but it's a standard bank resolution, and it authorizes me as the signer on each account and what I would do with that. And I think we can note this in the minutes. And, you know, certainly I'm not asking for any more authorization for anything other than to transfer money into and out of our checking account from money market accounts established at these other banks. That's the only authority I'd ask for. I wouldn't want to write checks directly from those accounts, and so therefore the, you know, any actual expenses would be under the same restrictions we have on our checking account.
So why wouldn't the transfer money work the same way?
What do you mean?
Like, meaning the restrict, like whatever those restrictions are, does Bob as, do I or Bob, who signs what in terms of the ability to withdraw that money, or is this all consistent with our general policy on how you, what money you can access and how?
It's consistent, I think, although I'd have to check. I think this is the same policy we have for the existing money market account.
So that is fine.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is I can transfer money at will between money market and checking. That's not an expense. It has to come out of checking to be an expense. It's only allowed to come out of checking as an expense, and that's when it's subject to signatures.
The two signatures.
Yeah. So that's the proposal, is to authorize these three standard bank resolutions. They are for Chorus Bank, CalFirst Bank, and EverBank, and I verify that all of them are members of FDIC independently, so I know it's kind of a risky environment. And so that's what I'm asking for, is authorization of those three resolutions and authorization of me as the signer, with the stipulation that I won't be writing checks directly from the money market accounts, except to transfer to checking.
They have high interest rate. That FDIC.
Yeah, the FDIC just provides you your cash within 3 days.
I also searched a bailout blog and didn't find these banks anywhere on it, which is, I think, a good sign.
So we've talked about this already. I agree with this. Fine.
Okay, we're done. Are we done?
We have to vote. So
voted. I vote yes.
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 I was at the Treasury today trying to get into guarantee principal on mortgage-backed securities, but until that's done, I vote yes.
Thank God. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Next. All right, the updated research agenda. I mean, I don't know how much I want to... This is, you know, a little bit more involved, and the basic idea is that we've done a basic outline of what we want to be in a research report. We've done basic estimates of how much time it's going to take. You know, most of the estimates are based on similar tasks. Some of them are kind of wild guesses, and we're continuing to track our time. And the basic idea is that this outlines a proposed kind of very broad time allocation target and target for putting out our report. We're aiming for July 1st. Basic elements of the report will be the ones listed at the top of this document, so you can see those pretty easily. And That's all. I mean, I don't even know if this requires a formal vote, but it's basically it's kind of our short-term business plan, and this is how we're going to be spending our time and what we're going to be trying to do. So
I have this evolved over the last 3 months?
The main thing, I mean, we've got the same target date, and we've got the same basic idea, which is this is the big report on developing world aid. I guess I don't have a side-by-side comparison of, you know, what each component, what's going to be in each one, and blah, blah, blah. It's very broadly the same, but it's much more fleshed out, and I think the time estimates are much more grounded right now. Before, we picked a date out of the hat, and now we're seeing what we can do based on reasonable hours estimates.
Right. I mean, the biggest thing we discussed last time that, you know, that might have been in this report, I don't know if you'll all remember, is the charity database project. And I'm sure we've probably discussed it in the biweeklies, but the basic idea is that was something we were talking about trying to present in this report, and I think most of the board was pretty much against it, and after Holden and I tried a little bit more to get it going, we couldn't do it in anything close to the type of time we thought it would take, and so that is not going to be part of the report in any significant way. There are things that are related to that, you know, which is the brief write-ups of some major household name charities, not trying to give anything, you know, nothing similar to the type of in-depth reviews that we do, but explaining why we don't strongly recommend them, what issues we see with those types of organizations. And so that's the biggest substantive change from something we had discussed earlier. And then the rest, like Holden said, is just fleshing out things that in December were relatively vague. And now we can, you know, we say we want to answer general questions about aid, and now we're listing the 10 specific issues we're going to hit with a good sense of how long it's going to take to hit them.
Okay.
I mean, all the details of the, I don't know, there's a lot in this document that says exactly what it's going to be, so if you want to read it in your own time. Then.
So, I mean, the other important point from the document that's not listing specific parts of the research is, you know, that we're planning to spend, you know, we've had this discussion in the past, but we're planning to spend up to 20% of our time for this report on what we're calling packaging, which is research presentation as opposed to doing research itself. We think that spending that amount of time is, you know, will allow us to complete the report that is outlined here by the target date, and spending more wouldn't allow us to hit that deadline. And so that's sort of the other important thing that we hadn't discussed last time, but we are presenting here.
Right. That's kind of the like website versus research question. That's how we're kind of answering it for now. And I do think that after this report is done, I think there's a lot of questions about what exactly we'll be working on. But one thing is we probably would have more of a focus on, you know, at that point, once we've really got all the research written up and grounded, would be more focused on improving the presentation and trying to make sure that by December we have something really compelling in kind of a marketing sense. But it's not the biggest focus for now. It's more kind of a 20% at most kind of thing that we spend time if we see it being productive, up to 20%. And then the other thing, does it say this on here? I mean, we're experimenting also with having a employee sort of specialize in making the website better and making the presentation of information better, more compelling, more usable, you know, everything about it, because we think that's something that we're not particularly good at. It might be easier to outsource than the research work.
So it seems like when I look at this agenda, it seems focused on these sort of general questions about aid, and then go into the specifics about which various interventions work and which don't. And it seems less heavy on essentially give me the great charities that are executing this.
Yeah, not really in time terms though. Like you're reading an order of or something, like by amount of text or numbers, but
Well, I'm just trying to get an understanding of like essentially what I want to make sure we're doing is we're providing essentially good mechanisms for people who want to give their money to provide their money, good names, right? And I guess I see here.
That's number three, Bob. Bullet number three.
Yeah, I see number three. And then I look at number three and I say, wow, is that materially different, you know, than what we had, you know, 6 months ago? And so I guess I'm asking the question. I'm worried that it's just going to be a rehash of PSI and PIH.
Yeah, it won't be a rehash of PSI and PAH. I mean, it's going to have PSI probably will be recommended charity. They're, you know, PAH I'm a little less sure about. It's not. I mean, so the specifics are in there, but we're doing things differently. We're allocating, you know, a ton of time to this. I think it's more than half the total time allocation is just on charities, well over half. And we have a lot of stuff that we're going to look at that we know we didn't look at last year. So we can give you some of the more specifics on that if you want. It might be better to do that offline. It's not going to be PSI and PAH again. What it is going to be is it's going to be a small number of charities, and I think we've all known that all along. It takes a ton of time to do a thorough report on a charity. We don't want to do it for anything but the very best ones. There's no way to have a, you know.
You decide the filtering right. process is to determine what works, and then go look at charities that do that. That's the, instead of looking at lots of charities, to filter out who's doing something scalable. And
well, I wouldn't quite say that's the filtering process. The filtering process is to look at charities that are either, you know, focusing on things that work, which almost the bigger factor that eliminates charities on that is the focus part, because so many charities just do a billion things, and so it's, you know, it's finding charities that are very focused on one thing or several things, but kind of all in the category of, you know, proven good interventions, or finding charities that are publicly publishing the kind of data that would give you confidence on outcomes, and even if their interventions aren't on our list. And so those components are both things we're looking for, and we sort of do this charity scan, which is, it's like the charity database we discussed last time, it's just a lot quicker. It's just looking for answering those two questions. You look at a charity's website, you see, you know, would we investigate them further on the basis that they concentrate on our priority activities, yes or no, and would you investigate them further on the basis that they are publicly providing the kind of documentation that gives you confidence in outcomes. And then we kind of do a, you know, a tapering thing where we go through hundreds of charities, identify, you know, tens to do a more thorough, okay, let's really see what they have, and then identify something like five to really go deep on.
And right now, how many charities do you have that you plan on going deep on that you think could be finalists?
Oh, we can answer that better.
Well, I've looked through, we've kind of done our first scan, that real quick take at about 300 charities, and of those, we're going to do that, the sort of medium-level look at like 30 or so. So far, there's one that, so and of those, I don't know exactly how many are going to come out being worth going deep on, but it'll probably be a few, you know, in the 5 to 10 range. I think right now, of that set of 30, there are two that are we're pretty sure are worth going deep on. One is the Stop TV partnership, which we're pretty close, I think, to having a review done in, you know, a quicker time than we've been able to do before. And then the other one is an organization that J-PAL has reviewed a bunch of. They're an education organization in India, and so the information's out there for us to be able to review that.
Right. I think those two stand out, and I would personally, you know, estimate there's going to be there might be like five more that we would really like to go deep on, and you know maybe three, four more that we have time to go deep on, and we'll have to pick them. But things could get better because our time estimate for how long a big charity takes is based on kind of the first one we did, and we believe that we learned a lot, that we could do the next one a lot faster, and we're going to know that soon because we're trying to finish this one. And if we're as close as we think we are, it's going to be like a third of the time that the first one took.
Which one's this?
This is the Stop TB partnership. So that makes me think that it might be good just to give a general, like, let me just give a general sense of kind of what we're concluding as we're doing this work and what we're thinking about who's good and, you know, and what the patterns are. You know, a couple things. I mean, I think one pattern we're definitely noticing is that health, it just is a better understood, I believe, more proven, better track record area than these other areas of developing world aid. You know, there could be a lot of reasons for that. One is that it's, you know, it's pretty measurable. You can tell what's going on and what you're trying to do and how to track it. Two is that, you know, it's there's a lot of like technology aspect to it where you're bringing drugs or technologies that people don't have or can't afford and have been very well tested. So you contrast that to a lot of these other initiatives that really, I think, I mean, anything that you do in a developing country, you need to, is going to depend a lot on culture and contingency and stuff like that. But to me, there is a big difference between the challenge of vaccinating a population or treating a population for TB versus growing a local economy, or a local community, or even, you know, teaching useful skills in education. So those are various reasons. But basically, when you look at what are the big success stories, they're nearly all in health. When you look at what are the charities that are doing focused activities and or that are, you know, very well, mostly the second one, very well monitored, they're mostly health. That's a pattern we're finding. And then within that, there's these global health partnerships that are generally kind of housed at the World Health Organization. There are alliances of lots of organizations, and they focus on a particular problem. And not all of them, they vary a lot, but Stop TB Partnership is one of them, and there's other ones that they're just very transparent, they have very clear goals, and they're publishing a lot of data on what they're doing. So you can figure out what they're doing, you can figure out how it's going, it's very clear what's going on, and it is a very different feel from a lot of the more traditional charities that do a lot of things and don't really report much about anything that's going on.
And they're underfunded? Like, if there's more money, will do more good?
I mean, it's always possible. It's always impossible to know that for sure, but they definitely appear that way. For example, the Stop TB Partnership, they have their estimate of how much it would cost to, you know, to cover all the areas, based on their, you know, basic cost of what they've done so far, and it's, you know, it's way, way more than the amount of funding they have committed for the next few years. So it's one of the harder questions to answer. It's one of the ones that we don't have a great sense of how to do, but to the extent we can, yeah, we think the global health partnerships, at least several of them, and at least, you know, a lot of the good ones that we're excited about do appear underfunded. So that's not to say we're only going to recommend those. So there's also this organization, Pratham, which is recommended by the Poverty Action Lab. They're not that. They're an education organization. And it appears that the programs they do are pretty well proven, at least in the kind of proximate. Do they improve education outcomes? So there's that. And we also, then there's this area of sort of the, well, let me pause there. So those are kind of the standouts, you know, the global health partnerships, there's Pratham, and then there's going to be some other one-offs, but that's kind of some of the patterns. And then another pattern is the sort of economic-focused interventions. I don't know exactly what to call them. Every time I call them something, it seems like I should call them something else, but they're programs that are not focused on education in the sense of academics. They're not focused on health. They're focused on sort of directly raising income. So that includes microfinance, includes like spectacles, cell phones, agriculture. And, you know, what I've seen is that agriculture programs specifically have a really rocky track record, especially in Africa. There's been a lot of like actual failures, a lot of sort of initiatives abandoned. And then a lot of the other initiatives had just really spotty track records where it's just really either hard to collect information or people aren't doing it. I think they're, you know, any of these things are complex, but I think these kind of goals are especially complex. It just, there's all kinds of pitfalls in terms of, you know, knowing things about the local economy. So there's amazingly little information available on microfinance or really on anything in this general category that would really
give you a sense.
Have
you looked at research from the Center for Microfinance?
Is that the microfinance gateway or is that something else?
No, it's something else.
Okay.
That's the one that Annie used to head.
Okay. I'll look at it. I mean,
it's known as CMF.
I mean, the microfinance stuff.
Center for Microfinance, you'll find their research. Sorry?
I mean, okay, go ahead.
No, I was just saying if you just Google them, you'll find their research.
All right. I mean, we'll definitely check it out. I mean, there's a lot of writing on microfinance, but there's also, when you read the writing on microfinance, there's a lot of repetition of people specifically saying there's very little information on the things that actually
happen. Basically, just so you know, the Center for Microfinance is essentially a J-PAL initiative. So it's mostly J-PAL researchers who work with them to run randomized evaluations of microfinance organizations in South Asia.
Okay, we'll check it out.
And Pratham, I don't know if you know, but Pratham is currently doing a 3-year study with J-PAL funded by the Hewlett Foundation on the efficacy of their huge national program on literacy.
Okay.
And I'm not sure, but the second year results should be coming out by May or June.
Great.
You can contact a guy named Michael Walton to find out. about when those results come out. He's a Harvard professor who's doing the research.
Great. What's his last name?
Walton, W-A-L-T-O-N, Michael Walton. His wife is the head of the World Bank in India.
Oh.
I can send you his email address if you remind me.
Okay,
thanks.
So just to wrap up what I was saying about that category of charity, so that's, it makes it a challenge. It's especially tough because we have money that's earmarked specifically for that. We have donors who are excited specifically about that. So there's two individuals that I know wanted their money used for that, and then there's also this, you know, the big one, the $250,000. So we are going to have to recommend, in the sense of at least, you know, investigating, deep diving, saying, you know, this is the best we can do. We're going to have to do that for someone in that area. And the $250,000 is specifically for Africa. And so, you know, we may have to take a slightly, an approach that's more similar to what we did in year one on that one, where, you know, we're going to have to sort of create a grant application and announce it and see who we can get the furthest with. And so I'm just making people aware of that. So that's a general outline of research in my mind, is that global health partnerships are pretty promising. Health in general seems like a pretty good area, like a very good area. Education is a little mixed, but there's at least one organization we're very interested in, and there may be more. And then the economic stuff is probably going to be the toughest, but we are going to have to, you know, at least say this organization is the best we can do for someone.
So what is what are you running into in microfinance? Like I would think that it basically comes down to if there have been finance available otherwise, and
well, that's a huge, okay.
But, and then they don't invest out of it. And the second part of it, did they get paid back? Like if it wouldn't have been finance available and they got paid back, it seems like it's obviously creating good.
Right.
And
so
there's quantities of that.
So the wouldn't have been financing available question is definitely just a huge question that everyone has. So that's one question. Would there have been financing available? And like, just so you know, I mean, there's one study where a guy went in and like looked at did an impact study of a microfinance program and found nothing. And then he was like, oh my God, like there's all this other financing available. When they do studies of the poor, I mean, it's, there's often other financing available. The other financing is often at what you might call usurious rates. On the other hand, microfinance programs are generally at what you might call usurious rates. And so the question is, what's the difference? And it's just, I'm not saying there's no difference, I'm saying it's very unclear. So that's one issue. Repayment rates, I think, are also, I think that you don't want to read as much into them as you probably are for a couple reasons. One is that there are concerns that people borrow from one MFI to pay back another, and this is especially an issue with how trendy microfinance is and with how much it's growing and with how many MFIs there are, MFI being microfinance institution. And so there's definitely a concern that those repayment rates, you know, somebody just pointed this out to us on our blog, actually, but we've discussed it before, like could mean less than you're hoping. And then finally, there's just this targeting issue. You know, people don't seem to know very much about the people who are borrowing at all. You know, I was just looking at this study that was, there's a program that had a land holding requirement, and it was trying to give to people with less than a certain amount of land. But in fact, the more land someone had, and this included past the limit, the more credit they were taking out. And so it's, you know, who's really taking out these loans? Are they the poorest of the poor? And they don't have to be. They could be people who just need a little help. But at some point, you're saying, all right, this might be helping someone, but we have no idea how much. We have no idea whether it's the exception or the rule. And so there's all those concerns, and there tends to be very little information to answer.
One of the main problems, I think, is that without credit reporting systems in the areas where microfinance organizations are active, it's very difficult to tell who's a good lender and who's not, and it's also very difficult to tell what someone's track record is, which is a primary failure in microfinance. So people could be paying back with other loans, but you don't know if they have other loans, et cetera.
And there's very little...
There's no good measure of impact to date.
Right, and the impact thing is big because I think because of all those questions that I just raised, you know, I think in a lot of ways you would feel better if you saw kind of just a direct, all right, did this improve people's nutrition, standard of living, et cetera. And that stuff is really, it's thin, and where it's well done, it's very inconclusive. You're not getting the great results that you hope for.
Speaking in these terms, and Lindy mentioned the Prothom study, the second year results are coming. Esther and Abhijit are publishing sometime in the next few months the results from the first randomized controlled trial of the standard microfinance product from a study they did in and the early returns from that essentially say it helps some, but doesn't do the vast majority of what people have said that it does, at least not on a measurable basis.
I thought they found no impact on life outcomes, but that's only based on reading your blog, so you probably know better than I do.
Yeah. So there was no measurable impact on some of the standard life outcomes that people purport in the marketing,
mm-hmm.
right? No additional spending on education, no additional spending on some other things. It's not the same as saying that there's no benefit to the borrower. The question is, with something like that, given these questions and how popular these things are, it would seem to me that that's the sort of thing that should fit in here somewhere. If we're doing a report in July, presumably after this has come out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a question, too, of, the last I spoke to them, they were still doing all of the research. So if it comes back and says, yes, there are measurable but small gains, how would we treat that? Because that's a study of one particular microfinance lender.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, one of the nice things that they tend to do, and I don't want to get too stuck into JPAL here, but one of the nice things that IBG Nestor do is generally look for what things work. So if they find that a particular type of microfinance tends to work very well, whether it's a delivery mechanism or a learning plus lending mechanism or whatever, it might be worth finding some organizations that do the kinds of things that they suggest work well instead of just using that one charity or that one lender.
But the conclusion on what works well at this point would be only supported by one program in one area.
Right. That's part of it, too, of thinking, so what would we do?
Well, no, that's not true. That's only from this most recent study. But the Center for Microfinance has been doing research in this for at least 4 or 5 years.
Okay, we'll look at what they're doing.
We're looking at them and maybe talking to Annie again about what specific things we know work well. But, I mean, if we're talking about number of lives saved, like, I personally do not think this is the right area to target.
Okay.
Because there's not enough conclusive evidence. You know, there may be 3 studies or 2 studies or whatever, but I just, if you're looking at, does this make people better off or not, and how many people are we helping, it's very difficult to provide that data.
All right, so just to step back a second, I mean, this is, these are the kind of conversations that Ellie and I are constantly having and just always looking for more research and, and factoring that in. So the answer to Tim's question would be, we're going to look at the Center for Microfinance. We're going to try and read all the relevant research we can. We're going to have a view on what's the kind of case that this sort of program works in general. And we're going to have a view on whether there are charities out there that are giving you the kind of information you want. So what I presented before is my guess at what that's going to end up being, which is that this is one of the weaker areas in terms of being able to get confidence that it's going well, and yet we are going to have to, spend enough time to at least be mildly positive on one charity. I mean, not positive, at least spend enough time to identify the charity that we would pick if we had to in this area. So that's my guess, but we're going to continue having these kind of conversations. So this is, we're considering all this stuff. We're trying to find this research and factor it into how we're making decisions and recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I ask another question about another section of the report, just in terms of a little bit more explanation?
Which report?
I mean, the report.
Oh, okay, this document. Okay, yes. Yep.
There isn't more than one, right?
No. Well, we're working on 3 other reports, too, I should have mentioned. All right, yeah, go ahead.
In the general conversation about aid and things, obviously this is a controversial area that lots of people are writing books about. Everybody's paying attention to the Moyo book right now, but it is only the last in a long line of books of this nature. So point one is, what is going to be the unique value of what this report is going to deliver as opposed to all of the books that have come before?
Uh-huh.
And the people that you are talking to seem to fall on one end of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
which is, the sentence scale that I absolutely agree with, but wondering about your efforts to talk to people at other ends of the scale simply to be able to respond to that very predictable critique.
Okay. Yeah, I can definitely answer that. I mean, what this report will have that's different is obviously to focus on the donor and what this means for an individual donor giving a few thousand dollars or whatever, and that's a lot because, you know, aside from the fact that the bulk of the report is charity reports, and the goal of everything that's not charities is really just to summarize the other stuff that's out there and the aspects of it that are directly relevant to individual donors. So that's, you know, there's that. But almost, I mean, the Moyo book that you mentioned and the Easterly book and the Sachs book, they're all about official aid flows. They're all about government-to-government or multilateral-to-government flows. And so, you know, it's a very specific debate, and the issues we're going to be discussing, I mean, we use a lot of their stuff for sure, but it's got the slant toward individual donor, and that definitely means certain things. So that moves me to the next question, you know, how would we respond? You describe a spectrum, and just to clarify, I think what spectrum you're talking about is what's often called the sort of optimist and pessimist spectrum, where the kind of, you know, the optimist would be someone like Jeffrey Sachs, who is very focused on more aid, and the pessimist, you know, with the extreme end would be people saying aid is net harmful, but usually pessimists are associated with people like William Easterly, who just say that we don't need to focus on more aid as much as we need to focus on better aid. So first off, is that the spectrum you're talking about? And we're obviously at the second end. I mean, we've been focused on
the second. I refer to it as the Sachs-Easterly Index.
Okay, great. So obviously, I mean, a lot of the people we've talked to are more on the Easterly side, but there's a reason for that, which is that we're not talking about exactly the same question that Sachs and Easterly are debating. And so to a large degree, you know, our question that we started off with is where should you give? We're not in the business of begging people to give more, and usually the people who put more thought into where should you give are the ones who are on the side of the spectrum that says improving aid is a higher priority than increasing aid. And so that's a reason that, you know, so much of the stuff I'm citing and discussing, I mean, William Easterly talks a lot about what's worked and what hasn't, and Jeffrey Sachs is very focused on different questions, like how much money it would take to scale up the things he believes will work. So that's an explanation. You know, are we ignoring the other side? No, I don't think we are. You know, I've tried to be pretty broad in the books I've read and the think tanks I've scanned. I've certainly seen things and read things from that end of the spectrum, tried to see what they have. As far as people we talk to, I mean, one of the people that we talk to regularly and I'm talking to next week is Matt Bonds, who, you know, used to work right under Jeff Sachs and is very much from that end of the spectrum. And so that's, you know, I don't think we're ignoring them and the contribution they have, but I don't think it's a coincidence that the improving AIDS part of the spectrum is more, you know, generally is just giving us more meat to put into our report, which is explicitly from the beginning about where should you give and how to give better, not give more.
Thanks.
I don't know if we need to vote or anything, because I was going to go off on a slight tangent. It was just something that occurred to me. All right, I'll just do it unless someone stops me. This just reminded me of this when Tim asks how we're going to deal with the new microfinance report. Now, you know, I think we've seen the kind of preliminary summary of the conclusion, so we're gonna work that in. But maybe the report comes out after we release this thing. And how are we going to keep up with new research? And I don't know. I was just thinking that my picture of how our research process goes has changed a fair amount. Where the kind of year one process was kind of you had to repeat the whole thing every year because it was based on grant applications. And now I have much more of a picture of, you know, this developing world aid report. We're seeing what's out there. We're seeing what's known. And we're going to build up something that's, you know, here are the charities that are already sharing their information. And from there, to keep it up to date, wouldn't be anywhere near the same amount of work. It would be a matter of factoring in, okay, a new paper came out in the last year. A new charity is now claiming that it has the goods. And I also think the second thing is not going to happen all that often until and unless we get pretty big, you know, or for other, like someone with similar goals gets pretty big. So it's just something that I was, you know, thinking on in terms of the evolution to GiveWell, that I think for a given cause, developing world aid or research or whatever, there's kind of this big you know, up front, you build the groundwork, you see what's been found out in the last 50 years, what charities are already ready to go, and then from there, it's kind of a very different and thinner process to keep things up to date. That's all. I just wanted to mention that.
So how do you, in that context, how do you see, essentially, from version one report coming out to Thanksgiving?
Hmm? Oh, that time period?
No, yeah.
I see several possibilities, so I can tell you what they are. It's some that I'm not sure about yet, and I'm not even really that ready to discuss much at this meeting. I think we have to think more about it. It's a little far off, but you know, one possibility is to put a lot more time into presentation and marketing and say, okay, now we have something that's I think a better, more satisfying report on developing world aid. I think we can speak with more credibility on it. Let's think more about how to get it out there. And also how to present it so that in December, you know, it's more effective. So that's one thing we can spend time on post the release of this report. And then another thing is investigating other causes. And what I would want to do specifically on that is I wouldn't want to pick a particular cause and dive in the way we did this time, because I see several candidates for possibly most promising cause after this one. And I think what I would want to do instead is I would kind of want to do the non-charity hack of this report for several causes at once, or, you know, several in a row, and get the general sense of, okay, in this cause, let's call it U.S. education or global warming issues or, you know, disease research, what have been the big successes? What have been the big failures? How much have the successes cost? What's the kind of cost, you know, bang for your buck? And from there, kind of form a general view on, okay, if I'm a donor, which area would I kind of bet on next to go investigate? And that's probably, and I also think that would be good from a marketing or report or whatever standpoint, because then we would basically have one deep report that says this is where you give, and then one broad report that says this is the kind of place you should give to, and then that would set our, you know, the next thing we would do is we would take the thing that we think is best and investigate that deeply the way we're doing this. So those are possibilities I have in mind. I don't know exactly how to allocate between them, or, you know, I don't have much more than I just told you, and I think we're going to have to discuss it at a future meeting. The non-charity hack is really quick, because you know, there's academic research and people have done a lot of the work for us, so it's quicker to answer those general questions. It eats a ton of time to figure out what the good charities are. Of course, that's our value added, but I think the plan I just outlined makes sense.
I'm going to make kind of an over-general, over-broad statement here, but I want to throw it out anyway. I mean, I think there's I'm not going to say a conflict, but there's sort of an interest in two different directions here. One is, you know, identifying, we talked about this stuff before, in identifying great charities, and the other is sort of being a reference point for people who want to know about their charity. And the first mm-hmm. is more opportunistic and more sort of identifying either great, you know, great interventions, to use the older term, or just, you know, great organizations. And the second is, you know, again, to be able to respond to somebody if they ask about, well, what about Heifer? And I think I think Holden and Ellie, sorry to talk to you about you guys in the third person, but I think you guys sort of had an interest in both. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing if we make GiveWell sort of more identified with you guys. I think if we want to make it sort of an iconic thing on its own and have the personalities, I'm making sort of a marketing point here, make it more, have sort of more of an identity on its own that's independent of the key guys. That you know, that's sort of a different strategic direction, and I guess what I'm getting to here is I think, you know, when we begin thinking about, you know, quote, the website issue or the packaging issue, I think that's not just a web design issue. I think it's sort of a strategic issue, kind of a branding issue in some ways.
So where do you see that? Can you just where do you see that causing a conflict or a I'm just, what are some of the practical consequences of what you're, I mean, well, first I'd want to say, I mean, I don't think that, I think some people might interpret you differently from what you mean, or maybe I am. So, you know, in terms of, when someone asks, what about my charity, we're never going to be able to give them an answer at the level that we give them, you know, about our top charities, because it's really involved to investigate a charity when they have info available, and most of them don't, so it's usually impossible to investigate a charity thoroughly. And so I don't think we literally, you know, I don't think we can answer that question in the same way as the first question, but I think what the second question might mean is more, we can answer it at the broad issues level. And so when someone says, what about Heifer, we say, well, Heifer works in this area. These are the concerns in this area that you should have about any charity that isn't proving A, B, and C. And then here are the charities that are proving A, B, and C. And that is kind of, you know, that is kind of something that I see as pretty unified. I think our current website's set up that way and works at least a lot better than the old one, which was just charities, which is, you know, you come to the website and it's addressing both halves. It's addressing, you know, why shouldn't I just give where I was giving before? And where should I get? And I think that's good. I mean, we could just answer the second one and only preach to the choir of the most already on board people, but I don't see a reason to do that. I think we can often come up with good arguments for the first half of the question and sell more people and get broader appeal.
So yeah, I think as I wrote you, Holden, I think that the, you know, identifying, you know, tactics or interventions or you know, sort of making cataloging interventions as opposed to charities is a much more tractable problem than cataloging charities. And I think it's a clever way, it was a clever solution to the problem that kind of came up in the last board meeting. I guess I still think that the potential problem is really just a resource allocation issue. You know, does being even comprehensive about writing up certain charities, you know, even if you have to do a report on Save the Children or some representative set of well-known charities, is that a distraction from getting a word out about iodine as an incredibly cost-effective, life-changing intervention?
I don't think it's a distraction. I think it's, you know, I think time we spend sort of saying why you shouldn't give where you're already giving is obviously time we could spend learning even more about our favorite charities. I think it's a reasonable allocation. I think it's a, you know, the overall GiveWell message is trying to convince people that instead of giving traditionally, they should give to the charities that we recommend, really. And that, you know, I think that is one unified mission, so that's all that I...
And I think pursuing it at the strategy level is the thing that makes the most sense, which you're clearly doing.
Right, I mean,
and then there's some, like, there's essentially, at some point, there's some relatively obvious overlap up the strategy level and some big names that you'll pursue.
Yeah, how much time would you spend on writing up the household charities you're going to...
The household charities is not much. I mean, the write-ups on specific household charities, it's like we're going to do 3 to 5, and they're probably a few hours each. This whole thing, I mean, is like 700 hours.
Yeah, so this would be 70 hours.
And these are the mythical focused hours we talk about all the time, because we can actually track those. So
and it's mostly
that's what we use.
Program types, right? Very little of it is.
It's just saying, it's like for the big ones, it's just saying, hey, they do a few things that we think are good. They do a ton of stuff we don't know anything about. There's other charities where we know everything they do, and it's all good. And that's why we support them as opposed to this household name.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not...
It's not going in depth on a household name charity because it's sort of functionally not even possible to.
And there's
just not a lot of information.
Yeah. And there's a much bigger allocation to the bullet point right above it, which is the, you know, the sort of, okay, popular program type. So this is the kind of thing that Tom could take issue with, or a lot of people could take issue with. You know, we want to really make the case that I was just having with Greg on microfinance, for example. We want that to be a page. We kind of have a page on that now, but we want it to be a little updated and to be more, you know, more good than it is. And a similar page on ART, which is very popular, which is where all the, you know, the concert benefits and the Bob Elliott organizations and all the sexy things like that send their money. So
if only I had known.
So, you know,
that micronutrients.
You could take time away from trying to explain to someone
why they should be worried about ART, but I think it's adding to the message, it's making it more compelling, and it's gaining followers, and, you know, I think for the time we've allocated is reasonable.
I guess there's some combination where you tell the story of the interventions like Holden Nelly we've been talking about in our conversations. So you incorporate that story into the report, and then you choose the charity for donors. You don't want to have to go find which charities have those interventions.
Right.
Right, so you're still telling that story.
Right. And we're also discussing some of the bad stuff. And, I mean, one way you could simplify this argument is, should we spend any time on the bad stuff or should we only talk about the good? And I think we should spend just enough time on the bad to illustrate why people should stick with the good. That's what we're trying to do. And so, you know, all the ones that we're not going through every intervention that we don't like. I've listed the ones that I think are really popular and really sexy. That's how I like it.
Yeah, I think that's all logical and makes sense, and you know it's certainly useful for me. I guess looking ahead to the packaging issue, I think it's something that it would probably help to kind of tighten it up and have a. I mean, maybe it's just a matter of sort of here's a hierarchy of what we're doing. We're trying to find great charities, and then, you know, what does that involve? And here are sort of the three main things. It's identifying great interventions. It's identifying very effective charities that employ those interventions, and it's, providing some context or some questions to ask about other charities that you may consider but may not be the best use of your money.
So would you, I disagree with the top level. I just want to make sure we're in sync on the mission. Is it to find new charities or force people to think critically about how to give to charities? It's pretty differently, because if the mission is largely to force people and give them a model about how to think critically about charities, it's different than finding good charities, and that distinction is important, even though I think that largely how you want to think critically is towards what is good, quickly reject what's bad and go towards what's good. And so to that extent, I would agree with the focus on what's good, but I would think the first step is what we're trying to do is force people to think critically. And so where I disagree with Holden is I think it's critical when people are asking the wrong question to tell them that and then move them along to the right questions rather than to answer their question as if it's a good question, because it won't help them think critically about the issue, which is more or less like you're the why heifer or whatever. It's fine, you might answer that question, but I would certainly have to answer it after saying it's the wrong question, which is more or less saying why don't I just invest my money in Coke? The point is that if you didn't think critically about it, then you didn't even start in the right place, and that's the thing you have to change, and not the try to dispute their uncritical thinking by the first question is, did you think critically about it? So why are you asking the question? And so that would be my focus, that all of the stuff, so I can kind of see where Holden's going, as long as it's geared towards getting people to think critically about what's going to work. And whenever you're answering those questions, see it through that lens so that you're pointing people in the right direction. Otherwise, it seems random to me.
Right. I mean, I think we're probably in sync. I mean, I probably am. Yeah, I'm probably more forgiving of you than you of people asking what you would call bad questions. I mean, I just think that we have our
forgiving or whatever. It's you want them. I don't think it'll ever work if you try to answer their question without first telling them why it's a bad question. You could answer it later. But because the whole thing is
it has to
redirect
be in that order. I mean, I like it. I think it often works better in the other order. And this is based on conversations I have with people, that it's often first, it's, you know, what about heifer? And then I say, well, heifer, they have some good stuff, they have some bad stuff. I mean, you know, you really can't tell what's going on. And here's the problem with not being able to know what's going on is, here's an example of a disastrous aid project that people almost didn't find out about because they weren't measuring it. And then somebody goes, oh, so what should you do? And then I say, well, you should, you know, look for things that are proven. I mean, that's a very natural progression. And okay, you can go the other. You want the website to be able to take people through many possible different paths of thought, in my opinion, and not through only one.
Yeah, I think it's bad, unclear progression and unlikely to change anybody's mind that way.
Okay.
Meaning because it's just a lot to absorb. Like in a way that people won't absorb information because you're not focusing them on the most important thing.
All right, well, I just...
Then because what people are going to naturally do by that is find something wrong in what you said, which there literally will definitely be, and won't realize the immateriality of that wrongness. And then you're setting yourself up for that, and it seems dumb. You go that direction, but anyway.
Well, I don't know. I think we're arguing largely about kind of like marketing slash packaging slash psychology.
I'm not talking about trying to achieve the goal.
Oh, well, I know that. I'm saying that like the...
I'm not arguing about marketing. I'm arguing on which...
But I'm saying what we disagree about. We're not disagreeing about like what GiveWell's trying to do. We're disagreeing about the tactics of how to do it, and specifically the basis of our disagreement is a disagreement about like how people's minds work and what people find...
Well, but the first thing he said, so I just want to be sure that we are... The first thing he said was try to find your charities.
Yep.
Which, like, is much more important, and so I'm just trying to make sure everybody's in sync on this level. So that's you are, John, obviously you are getting it from you, but like the more important thing than the finding the good charities is getting people to think a certain way about good charities, and then we draw the path and actually do it.
I think that I agree. I'm pretty sure that I agree with you. I mean, I think what you mean is that...
Because you wouldn't even have a mission if people actually were, like, measuring and thinking, like, how
right.
money, you wouldn't even have any purpose.
The idea is that we'd much rather have people kind of take on our values and our basic ideas and run with them and, you know, do their own analysis and have... And do that, than just have people always follow around our recommendations of where to give. That you know, the first one is, yeah, I we'd rather have that, and that. So, I mean, what's the mission of GiveWell? I mean, I think we've always had a little bit of a dual mission, although there's a ton of overlap. So I think it's a little overstated how dual it is. But we've always had a mission of getting money to the good places, however you do it, and also a mission of, you know, change the way people think about charity and change the mechanism and the incentives and the way the marketplace works. So they're extremely related. But generally, I'll do something high return in either area without worrying too much about whether it's, you know, this core to the mission, this part of the mission or that part. So I think they're both important. They're both worth doing. If I had to pick one, if I could only accomplish one, I would, you know, changing the mechanism is just more, it scales better, it's higher return. So. I think that answers the question.
It's a higher ultimate.
Yeah, but it also, it's how you get the first, I think.
Okay.
Like that if you're not, like, what are you doing with the first? Like, it's either, if you don't get it through that second, and like-minded people that would, like, listen to that, then...
Well, I can answer you. I mean, here's an exact example of how you can get the first without the second. It's the Peter Singer book. Stuff like that can continue to happen. Where Peter Singer goes out and evangelizes, you know, give more to developing world aid, he makes an argument very different from ours about why you should give to developing world aid, and then people who've never even given to that cause before say, well, where should I give? And he goes, well, check out GiveWell, they've got recommendations. That's literally happening. It could happen again with someone else, you know. So there's all kinds of ways that you could do what we're calling moving money, and there's different paths to that. You know, I agree with you that it's certainly a core part of the mission to be changing the way people think. I don't see GiveWell as a move the money however we can organization, but I also think when you see a way to move more money, then you should go for it when it's a high return way.
Can I throw out an idea I threw out before, and just shut me up if I'm being a drone on this? I think I mentioned to you guys once before, and maybe like having a, you know, a do-it-yourself page on, you know, if you want to look into a charity for yourself, here's how we suggest you do it.
Yep.
That might be a way to, you know, sort of in a slightly more general fashion, both communicate to people how we think about charity. You know, as Greg says, what critical thinking about charity is, and maybe have people question the way they, you know, directly question how people make their own charity decisions now.
Yeah.
So I think that we kind of, like, to me, we're trying to show how to look into charities by looking into charities. And I mean, we could maybe think of something in the future, but I don't really see how that works when the unit is, like, a sort of a specific charity that someone's interested in.
I don't know if it works or not.
That's a good tool. Yeah, we did it this week informally when I asked you guys. My boss was getting all these.
No, we could write something like that. I think, and we've had this conversation with Tom. I remember this very clearly, and it is like written down on a list. I don't think you know, I think it's something that, I would want to have that, you know, what would be an important date for doing something like that would be more of a December date. B, the longer we go before we do that, the better we're going to do it, because we're still sorting through the process ourselves as we do it. So, you know, I think it's something we should do at some point. But I also don't think it's, you know.
The critical for you guys to do is systemizing what you're doing, like, which I think you should do. Like you should think about what you're doing.
Yep.
And why, and force yourself to not get screwed up, and also that it's much more, like, I disagree with you and think you get blurry if you do for what it's worth. If you confuse those two things, like, in fact, your other moving money and uh-huh. another thing.
Yep.
Of course, if you move money sort of by accident, it's good because you're moving money in the right way, but there'd be any effort in that direction will blur up the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is this, like, that's not like, nothing's like black and white, but it does seem like when you communicate, why does Peter Singer pick you? Like, fine, he can pick you because you're the only ratings organization he knows of or whatever, but he should be picking you because he understands why, not just random.
Well, I think he's picking us because he understands why. I think, yeah. But I think a lot of people read his book and give and,
right,
you know,
and that's
don't
why
understand.
You didn't do anything related to that. You convinced
right.
Peter Singer because he understood your mission. And if you were trying to, and certainly it would not sell me, if it was confusing, if the mission wasn't clear. And this thing is, like, as an example, is very consistent with the mission and would make it more clear, like, that what the mission is, where anything that you're doing to try to move money is inconsistent with the mission.
Okay, well, let me speak to the thing that Tom's proposing first. I mean, I just want to add that we are doing that at a more specific level right now. For the international aid, we've got this charity scan we're doing, right? And so we're, like, something that's very close on the list and actually also dovetails with trying to help out Charity Navigator is writing down very specifically, all right, what is the criteria for marking, you know, for basically marking a charity as promising in this area, in international aid. And then, like, to do that for a generic charity would, you know, to make that kind of a user-friendly thing that could apply to any cause, I would want to write up examples for several causes. It would be kind of, in my mind, a little bit of a tangential task given what we're working on now, something that I would be happy to do at some point.
And I think that's okay. Oh, but it should basically fall out of here's what we do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. But that's what I'm saying.
So the writing up what you do versus sort of translating that. You could even hand that off to somebody if you are being clear about what you do.
Yeah.
Because it's really just moving the pieces around, because you're not starting with a charity, you're going down through, and then
right.
there's the just picking it up and working backwards through that logic. So the important thing, it seems like we're in agreement on, is making sure, like, here's what we do is somewhat understood as you're going through it, and then you keep updating that as you change it.
Yeah, yes. So that's what when I hear Tom's proposal, what I think is, okay, what work would we have to do to have that on our website? And in my mind, the work is what you're now describing, which is, you know, it's writing, it's presentation work, it's, you know, I'm not saying, okay, well, we'll think about how to evaluate a charity later. You know, we think about that now. And we're trying to systemize our process more and more as we go along and actually write it down very explicitly for international aid. But back on the, I don't really remember how we got on the money move point. Money, like the two aspects of the mission, like move money and you know, get people to think more critically. I mean, what exactly does that relate to? Does anyone even?
Well, clarity. The topic that it was under was clarity of the mission. Are we blurring it? Things like trying to, like, telling, like, what is the purpose of telling people why their charity is bad?
Oh,
how is that consistent with the mission?
Oh, but I see. But that, I think, I don't think that you're gonna, that argument is not gonna connect to that for me, because to me the purpose of telling someone why a charity is bad is as a way to get them to think more critically. And the thing we're disagreeing on is, like, the psychology of that.
Right, and that's where I'm so. And we are. So I don't know. Everybody's in sync on that. We're in sync on that as long as it's sort of focused on that.
Yes.
Versus the other thing, the encyclopedia kind of thing,
no.
focused on information, so people
no.
can use you as an information source.
No, and we've never had that in mind. Just to even, you know, even the last meeting, what I think you thought we did, but, you know, that's not. It's always been like that, and I think a very easy way to see that would be to go to our current website. I think it's very much set up that way, where there's an all charities button, because when we did user testing, people really wanted something like that. They wanted to know about a specific charity. And when you click on charity, you do get a write-up on that charity, but it's very focused on, you know, it's not answering questions literally. It's saying this is the basic framework under which we believe this, you should have concerns about this charity, and that framework leads to, you know, these other charities that are good, and click here, and I think that thing has improved the performance of the website, so that's my point on psychology. But as far as the focus, you can check it out yourself to see if it's consistent with that.
Is there anything else?
Okay, so where do we go from here?
I don't know. Is everyone happy? In general?
Straw poll.
Well, so we should. I don't think this is anything that requires a vote. Right. This agenda. So I don't think we need to go through that formality. But the goal is, you know, we want the board up to date on what we're doing and why. And I think at this point, it seems like we've had most of the high level conversation. So I don't really need to discuss anything else. And does anyone else?
No.
I guess I just like. I would only like to have some sense about when we get to the more serious packaging stuff, which I presumably is going to happen after a fair amount more research is done, how's that going to go? What are the guiding principles there?
Okay. Well, the guiding principles is to make the website as effective as possible at sort of, yeah, at getting people to give to top charities for the right reasons, I guess would be one way of putting it. And the way that we have a long list of, you know, the way that we're testing that is that we have feedback from our supporters. So we have just, you know, you guys, a lot of you have sent feedback on our current website and on our preview report. We put that out. We had our research email list giving feedback on that. And we've got a wiki that has a long list of kind of things we want to change and improve about the website. And then another source of information about that, we have our website statistics, so we can kind of infer things about how people use the website. And then there's this user testing company where you can kind of pay someone $20 to click around on your website and speak into a microphone. That's pretty cool. And so we use that too. So those are ways that we kind of evaluate how our current website's performing and what needs to change. And then we have a wish list and we work on it. And as far as how that work gets done, my ideal is really to have another employee doing that, because I don't think it's something Ellie or I is particularly good at. I think there's a lot of people out there who could do a really great job with this and not even for that much money. We're experimenting with one right now who's more kind of a web guy than a communication guy, but I don't know. We might experiment with more than one hire in that area. And it's also something that Ellie and I, you know, we'll spend up to 20% of our time if we think it's productive while working on the report, and then afterward we may spend more, but that's going to have to be a later conversation. So does that all answer your question, Tom?
Yeah, I think so. We should talk a little more offline at some point, but yeah, that seems reasonable.
Okay. Anything else?
No. I think we're all set.
Nope.
Shall we call this meeting adjourned?
Okay. Nice and quick.
All right.
See you guys later. I'm adjourned. Good night, everyone. Thank you.